we thank you for joining us on This Week in Mormons this week, everybody. We're here to bring it to you. Mormon news, culture, topics, humor.
Coming to ya.
Coming at ya. Coming at ya, by the way, is the name of a great MXPX album.
Is there such a thing?
Yeah,
is
remember
a great
when
MXPX
we
album?
Remember their cover of 500 Miles and we rocked out to it while we were driving into Billings, Montana last year?
Yes,
that's one of those musical
that,
moments etched in my mind as far as location and where the song was happening and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I do remember.
Well, yeah, so this is our show. This was great.
Well, that was good.
It's going to be a good week. Laconic might be the word to describe how perhaps both of us are feeling. Al is exhausted.
Wait, first, can you explain to me what laconic means?
Okay, well, it might not be the best word.
Dear Google, define laconic.
You don't even have to say define. Of person, speech, or style of writing. Using very few words. Terse, concise, briefed, succinct, short.
So you're saying, what did you say? You said laconic might be the way to describe us this week?
We are tired and might not have much to say.
Are we using very few words? Terse, concise,
we will brief? Use as yeah. few of words.
I feel like you misuse. I feel like you use... You use very big words often, and I let them go because I assume you know what they mean. And 99% of the time you do, but I'm pretty sure you slip these in every now and then.
No, I know exactly what I'm saying.
Or you're just making it up.
And you should always assume I know what I'm saying because I do.
Isn't it?
Al, might I remind you that when I took the GRE exam, for the writing section, I placed in the 98th percentile.
How'd that work out for you?
It's wonderful. I didn't even need to take the GRE to go to grad school in Europe, but it was great.
Do all of your employers say, oh, I see you have an excellent vocabulary?
They do, yes. They look at me and they say, your resume strikes me as not laconic.
You use very many words, young man.
You are a verbose fellow, young man, aren't you? And I say, well, yes,
you say,
yes.
No. Some say verbose. I say not laconic. And they say, oh, wow.
And there's the name of this week's episode. Call it
some saver
just not we not say. Laconic that's what I'll just call it. Who knows what we'll do, but the reason why Al's a little tired. Tell us about your week, Al.
Let me tell you about my week, Jeff. I went down on Thursday afternoon to Havasupai in Arizona, which I didn't know anything about Havasupai. A friend of mine called and said, hey, do you want to go? And I said yes,
other than the absurd fees the reservation charges you.
No, I thought it was great. And then she called and said, hey, I got a few other slots. So I had one other buddy. So it was me and one of my friends from Hawaii and then a bunch of BYU Hawaii schoolmates.
Oh, yeah. Did you go with Mikey?
Nope. Went with Casey.
I thought Mikey was.
And then,
I thought you
then
mentioned
I'll,
Mikey when I was in Salt Lake last
no,
week.
No, I'm going back to visit Mikey on Saturday in Hawaii.
Oh, yes. You're going on your little guy trip.
So I head over and pick up these girls for our big trip down there, and we drive to Walmart, and I say, what do I need for Havasupai? So I bought me a twin air mattress and some brown and cinnamon Pop-Tarts and a couple of cups of noodles, and that was it. And so we packed that stuff up, had my clothes and books, and off we went. I was ill-prepared, Jeff. I was ill-prepared, and I should have done a little more
research. I kid
you
not, my wife and I just bought brown sugar Pop-Tarts tonight. So you're not alone.
Oh, they are delicious.
You are not alone. We ate them raw while we waited an extra hour to have dinner with our friends. It was wonderful.
I wish you had been on this trip, because had you been there, you would have made sure I had everything I needed.
I would have.
I did not.
You should just start paying me to be your personal assistant.
I had a Powerade and a water. And so you get there, we got there like probably 12:30 or 1-ish, because dinner in Vegas took a little longer than we expected. Continued our drive down and got there, slept out by the car, and then left at 4 in the morning. So we're tired already, and then it's a 10-mile hike down, yeah. And you're going down into the Grand Canyon, essentially, is where Havasupai
is. It is in the Grand Canyon. You're at the base.
Yeah, I didn't know this.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I'm hiking into the Grand Canyon, and I've got like some old crummy work shoes, and they are not treating my feet well. I'm very blistered up. It was like a 6-hour hike. So got down there though, beat the sun by, well, like we got there at like probably 11 o'clock in the afternoon.
So you did not beat the sun then. The sun was there.
No, but the majority of it, we beat the sun because it was early.
And you're in a canyon. So
well, so then we got there and spent 2 days just hiking around falls. Went and saw Mooney Falls and Beaver Falls and Havasupai Falls.
How far are the hikes to go to the different falls?
Oh, like 1.5-3 miles for one.
They're not that bad then.
Well, it's not that bad until you realize that you just hiked another 10 miles to go see some waterfalls on your off day, the day you didn't have to hike 10 miles. But did some night swimming up at the Havasupai Falls, and it was great. So it was like $45 a night to be down there, and you had to have a permit.
Right.
So I was out $80, but it was an incredible place. I mean, I think it's the calcium and lime and stuff in the water that makes it
calcite.
Like a stark. Calcite, that's what I'm thinking of. Makes it a stark, stark blue. It's just unreal to look at in these falls coming down, like the colors. I haven't seen a photograph yet that like represents it.
Does
correctly.
It justice?
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
That's awesome.
And I was very surprised, but the native folk very friendly. And I went and chatted. I was chatting with a couple of them down there, and I was just like, "Nah, seriously, I live around Amish people. I know how this stuff goes. Where's the road out of here? How do I just drive out of this place?" They're like, "No, the only way is hiking or horse or helicopter."
Was a lot of the hike sort of just along a cliff?
No, so the hike in was, well, some of it was along a cliff, and they had a bunch of switchbacks. The last 1.5 miles is all switchbacks straight up a mountain.
Wow.
And then, but you're hiking down this riverbed, so it's like small pebbles and sand and stuff like that. And, I mean, it was just like not having hiked in a long time, and then you put a 40-pound pack on your back and get going. You're feeling it, man.
Yeah.
You're feeling it by the time you get to the bottom. And so I was shocked at how ill-prepared my feet were. And so now I sit here before you, completely naked, blisters all over my feet, laying on my couch. That is how we're recording this week's show. I give you that visual, a 6'7" bearded man, blisters all over his feet, cannot move a muscle.
Okay. This sounds like a terrible like Goya painting or something. Just see you lying across your couch.
Dude, but you would have loved Vegas on the way down there. I stopped at this great Venezuelan place. Had my first, what are they called?
Arepos.
Arepos. Oh, they were delicious. Had some yucca root and my plantains.
I don't love the yucca, honestly.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
I had it out here. I've had yucca fries out here, but they're just too dense. I can't get behind that.
No, all you need is 3 fries, and you got a whole meal.
I guess so. The pity, though, is you should always have the buffet at the Rio. It's excellent.
I would not do that.
It's quite choice.
Jeff, you are a sad man if you ever feel the need to eat at a buffet.
No. The Rio's buffet is a whole different beast of buffet.
No, Jeff,
it's
you
serious.
Are less of a person.
I am a great...
Anytime that you think, what do I want to eat, and you say, let's just go.
Listen to me. It's like, have you ever been to Hometown Buffet?
Let me go to a place where they charge you by pound and not by what wonderful
okay,
dish
I'm never
like
going to
you.
Argue that buffets are a good value because, let's be honest, for how much they cost, how many plates full of food can you really have? They're not a great value. But the one at the Rio has really good food. It's been a long time, but it's a good buffet. It's not just some
Jeff,
prime
it
rib.
It doesn't hoo-ha. Matter. It doesn't matter. No.
You don't
matter.
You go
matter. To a restaurant
you
and
matter.
You tell them, you tell the
la,
people,
la, la, la,
this is what
la,
I'd
la,
like
la,
to eat.
La, la, la,
create
la,
this
la,
dish
la,
for me.
La, la, la,
instead,
la,
you would rather go to la, some la, sort of lunch la, pail la, place la, la, where they la, feed you slop and troughs and you go and scoop it out yourself like a peasant.
No, they serve you.
I will
it's
not
It's like
have
the
this.
MTC.
Oh, this changes everything.
You walk up and they say, what would you like? And you just say, Caesar salad once again. And then you walk away.
No, Jeff, that's still, you're having to go and
That was my MTC meal. Experience. Caesar salad, chocolate milk. Pretty much every meal. That's all.
Mine was 8 chocolate milks and whatever they had, plus a whole bowl of fruit salad twice.
Most of the other food was terrible. The worst, though, is when they had pizza night, which I assume they did when you were there, too. They did it, like, what, once a month or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
So you at least get it once when you're there. They had pizza night, and I think they only gave you 2 slices of pizza. But the sisters in our group would just take one because they didn't want to. And we sat there and stared at them saying, ladies, you're supposed to get 2 and then give the other ones to us, the men. This would not be the first time that sister missionaries let me down.
No. Go on.
Though there were many times. But this would also not be the first time the elders let me down. Just people let you down, folks. This is our message for the day from This Week in Mormons. People are going to let you down during your life. Now, you can either use that as a reason to fall apart and go hide in a cave and disappear from the world, or you can rise above and realize that people are human. The choice is yours, America and Australia. The choice is yours. And Canada.
Well, Jeff, I think that's fantastic.
Thanks.
How was your week?
It was fine. It's nice to be back here in D.C.
Where were you? Where did you go?
You know, it was I never remember. I have stuff in my calendar that I did, but a lot of it was just getting back in town.
You did nothing again, didn't
no,
you?
No, it was great to be back in my ward. I missed my kids. They even said they missed us. We actually asked them how their substitute was. And
Jeff, they're 4 years old. They have no idea who you are.
They do, because they call us by name.
Jeff, at that age, just because they, like, your name is equivalent to teacher.
No, this is what happens.
Or anonymous number two.
We stand there staring at each other, and they say, like, why should I listen to you? And I say, because you know who I am. Say my name. And then they look back at me, and they go, what? And I say my name. And then they say, you're Openshaw. And I say, you're dang right.
I am.
Now open up your Book of Mormon.
I feel like that's a good teaching method. I can respect that. Anyway, we got some good, exciting stuff going on this week, Jeff.
By the way, one thing I failed to mention last week, this is Mormon stuff, though, so it's fine. In Park City, did you ever know about this? They have a visitor's sacrament meeting. There's no block, just a sacrament meeting for visitors to Park City in that stake that has like 450 people show up. And they're all visitors.
Really?
I've just never seen anything like that in my life. I guess they must have had so many visitors over so long, they decided to stop burdening the local wards. And they have high priests groups in the various wards rotate on running the meeting and handling the sacrament. And
Oh, that's kind of a bummer. I love going to weird people's sacrament meetings.
I do enjoy visiting wards, but I couldn't believe sitting down there looking around realizing, like, not one of you people lives here. All of us are just here visiting. And they just give us a sacrament.
Here's the kicker. Havasupai had its own chapel.
I know. That is, you know, that's one of the most remote chapels in the church. And I believe one of the only ones not accessible by car.
I could have figured as much out, but I
forget
to
where I heard the story. Was it in General Conference or somewhere where a general authority who was once the stake president of the Kingman, Arizona stake, and that's what Havasupai falls under that, had these great tales to tell of having to take choppers from Kingman down into Havasupai.
Why would you do that? Why not just get good at hiking, man? Just hike that
stuff. It's going to bug me, though. I'm trying to remember where I heard these were really great stories all about the saints at Havasupai. It was pretty cool, actually, but I don't remember the citation, and I'm sorry.
People down there were great. They were super friendly. I was really surprised. I was talking to him. I was like, don't you hate tourists? He's like, man, in the off-season, there is no one to hang out with at all. I love it when you guys come down here. Look at this place. You come down and see our beautiful stuff and hang out with us. Awesome.
Did you have?
I was like, you have the best attitude of any local person I've ever met in my life.
When you got back up out to the rim, did you happen to go visit that skywalk thing? You know that horseshoe shaped bridge that sticks out. Havasupai runs
that. That is far from where I was. Yeah, okay. That is far.
Okay.
But I did visit the bearded man selling root beers ice cold for $1, and I spent $2.
Because you tipped him, or you bought two root beers?
I bought two root beers, Jeff. Who do you think you're talking to?
So some quick early news this week, just so you know, on the 21st, that's this Wednesday, President Monson celebrates a birthday. He turns 86, so make sure to send him your love.
We're going to do a big surprise party for him this year.
So if you follow him on Facebook and you can write on his wall, wish him happy birthday.
And we all know that you do follow him on Facebook, and you can write on his wall.
Once again, I will attempt to initiate a Google Hangout with him. I've tried in the past, but he's never there.
Dude, how great would that be if one time he just pops on, wiggles his ears, and then gets off, doesn't say a word? You're just like,
so
this really happened. This really happened. You have to believe me.
I would desperately make sure I could find the archive of that and publish it.
No, you can't find archives of these. They're not like passively recorded.
I thought they've started archiving Google Hangouts.
No. He would just come on, make this magic happen for a moment, and then be gone.
Well, then I'm going to make sure to publish it to YouTube, no matter what.
Every time you're trying to call
him. We're going to have this huge YouTube series of attempts to contact President Monson. It's going to be a great video series.
All we want is the ear wiggle. But like, but if you had people constantly trying to like get you on Hangouts, man, that would be the greatest thing to do, is just pop on there and be like, whoo, and then get out, run, keep running.
And he's cheeky enough. I think he'd do it.
I believe.
If he knew to do it. He's our leader in social media by far.
Actually, did you see the video of him at the groundbreaking for the Hartford, Connecticut Temple? I don't say Connecticut. I say Connecticut.
That is how it's spelled. So I applaud you for your effort.
Thank you.
I have not seen the video of him. I know he was at the groundbreaking. He got kind of an early surprise. I know they sang happy birthday to him at the dedication or at the groundbreaking.
And then he got up and shook his head and said, "You fools, it's on Facebook. My birthday's not till next week."
Yeah. But what happened in this video?
Well, no, he just seemed really tired, really old.
Where is this video? Is this on?
It's in the newsroom. We'll put it up on our feed. You guys can click into it. But he's just, I mean, not that he's like old, but like he's always got so much energy and he's very spry. And he was just like, maybe he was sick. I wonder if he was sick, but he was just very hoarse.
I hope he's doing okay because, I mean, not to be mean here, but what are we going to do if we have a Packer regime? I'm just saying.
Is Packer next? He is next.
Yeah. So bear that in mind, people.
Pray for your prophet.
Pray for your prophet. Exactly. We don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. Okay. I heard a bit of the video. Yeah, he does sound pretty tired.
Which hopefully he's just been on planes a lot. Man needs to take a break. Go down to Lake Powell with all your friends.
Yeah.
That's what everybody out here does. I still have never been
there. I've driven across the Glen Canyon Dam, which creates Lake Powell, but I myself have also never visited.
Sort of out of principle. Everybody's so fanatical about it. I have no desire to go see it.
I'm glad you feel that way. I felt the same way when I lived in Utah. All you hear about is Lake Powell, Lake Powell, Lake Powell. You're like, guys.
I'm like, no, thank you, people. I'm going to the Golden Spike.
We almost went there last year, but I forgot. You realize how far away it actually is from anything?
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half straight west.
Yeah, it's way out in the boonies. It's not like you just go to Brigham City and it's hanging out right there. It's just, it's not convenient at all. Which no. I don't.
But before we move on, just so you know, there was a groundbreaking Connecticut Temple. That happened. And that was exciting. So good for Connecticut.
It is good for Connecticut. Hartford, Connecticut, folks. So that'll give us... Well, how many?
Everybody got to go and turn a spade of sand, as it were.
I wonder how legit of a groundbreaking it is, because if you noticed, once again, they seem to have brought in a trough of dirt, a la the Philadelphia Temple.
It's a ceremony, Jeff. The golden spades, that's not doing anybody
I want them to be digging in actual dirt. They need to gold plate a caterpillar or whatever and just like start digging up parking.
Put President Monson in the cat. Like, all right, sir.
And then I want a giant mission accomplished banner unfurled behind him.
That like rolls down slowly as the spade or as the cat clutches.
Yeah, that would be a lot more fun, to be honest. So I hope they are actually breaking ground. I'm sure a lot of the temples, whether a ceremonial groundbreaking or a true groundbreaking, involve just the trough full of dirt, you know.
What do you care?
I care because I still feel
today is the day.
I care because I still feel like we've been led on about the Philadelphia Temple, which is now actually under construction, legitimately. But they broke ground on it way before they.
No more lies. No more lies for this temple.
I mean, President Eyring went there. He flipped the dirt, and I said, "This is awesome. I'm going to go to Philadelphia this fall. I'll see the construction." And all I saw was a parking lot without even a sign that said a temple would be being built there. Nothing.
That is kind of great.
I felt a little bit misled, that's all. It's okay. I've gotten over it.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
It'll be all right. Speaking of temples, simple little article here, but because of the Hartford temple groundbreaking, in the Avon Patch, for those of you who don't know, is owned by America Online. It's just sort of a local news outlet. It's really useful.
Hyper-local.
Hyper-local. Yes. I like Patch, though. Actually, you can get a lot of good stuff on there. It's nice, though, they try to actually explain to the local masses in Connecticut what the difference is between Mormon temples and Mormon meeting houses, which I'm assuming most of you listeners to this show hopefully know. But it's just nice to know that regular media outlets are trying to just kind of explain it a bit more to the people, which is nice to see.
How does one explain it, Jeff?
Well, so what's the distinction? Chapels offer weekly public worship services where all are welcome. Admittance to the temple is reserved for members living the highest standards of the church. They are also not used for Sunday worship. These are according to materials provided by the church.
Is the temple secret, Jeff? No, it's sacred. That's what we say. Boom.
Speaking of secret stuff, I think I'm going to check out the new film this week. I'm stoked.
Oh, yeah?
My sister told me in the Mesa Temple, they actually were turning people away. It was treated as an event. You had people queuing outside the temple. Just to see,
waiting 2 hours for the
just to see the new movie. I don't know if that's genuine excitement. If people in Mesa are just trying to show up the rest of the church, it wouldn't be the first time. So, I mean, think about it. They have a pageant in Mesa. Hill Cumorah, I get, but Mesa just says no. We have one too because it's Mesa, Arizona, obviously. But anyway, good.
Also, speaking about secretive things, did you know the Book of Mormon warns us about the NSA?
I love this article.
So this is in the old HuffPo. Robert Lockard, who we don't know much about. Who are you, Robert?
He's the
Lockard?
Business and entertainment writer, which clearly makes him authorized to talk about both politics and religion.
Just making stuff up.
He's a professional.
He wrote about the Chromecast, which I just bought this
week. You bought the Chromecast?
Yeah.
Is it?
I like it all right, except I can only broadcast like YouTube and Netflix to it, and then anything else I have to like browse to in my Chrome browser and then cast that.
Yeah, I've heard that's the main limited functionality.
The other problem I have with it is there's no iPhone app yet. They say there is, but there's not yet.
Do you think it would be more functional if you ran Android? Like, do you think there's native software to Android that would work better on it?
Yeah, because it's already built and out the door for that.
I guess they're cool, but for the regular things I do with my TV, I can't see what good a Chromecast would do for me.
I want it just so that like anything that I watch on my normal computer, I can just throw up.
But
you
can send it from your computer?
Yeah.
How can you send it from
computer,
the computer,
tablet, or phone?
Okay, I guess tablets and phones make sense. I just didn't know how you'd sync a computer to it.
It's like a Roku, but more integrated with your Chrome browser.
Yeah, that is cool, though, on the computer, because I'd love to throw anything I'm doing up onto the big screen.
So, anywho.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Let's see.
Oh, by the way, Robert Lockard, let's learn about him. He's a professional copywriter. He lives in Orem, Utah with his wife and 3 children. His hobbies include reading, writing, and crying fire.
And arithmetic. Well done, Robert.
He has an abacus.
Anyway, so he writes about the Book of Mormon's warning about the NSA, and he says, sort of capitalizing on the fervor that is around the NSA stuff, which I've been surprised there's a lot of.
Yeah, it hasn't
there's
died
down.
There's
a lot of people that are, and with good reason. My only problem with the NSA drama going on right now is I don't know what to do about it. I don't know like what even to do. I know like it's been revealed that they're doing all this stuff. They are spying on domestic
citizens.
Well,
I tell you
what
you do.
They're tracking them.
You go down to Camp Williams and take a sign. You stand there. You hold that sign.
Well, no, I when I think of like what would enact change, what would actually make a difference, I have trouble drawing any conclusions. I'm like, yes, I don't like this, but
Al, everyone knows that one person can't make a difference. Everyone knows that.
Good point.
Come on.
Good point. Like that old story of the starfish where the old man picks it up and says, could have made a difference to that one, and then cuts it in half and throws it back in the sand.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to this article.
We'll get there someday.
Why are we having trouble with this? but he talks about how in the Book of Mormon, he shares the story of King Noah when he built a tower near the temple, yea, a very high tower, even so he could so high that he could stand upon the top thereof and overlook the land of Shalom and also the land of Shemlon, which was possessed by the Lamanites. He could even look over all the land round about. Mm-hmm. Mosiah 11:12, and he says that is what the NSA has done. They are taking a page right out of that, and so the parallels to the Book of Mormon times, we can learn what to do, and we need righteousness.
He calls King Noah's Tower a form of the Patriot Act, or the NSA.
Now, I don't like, just because I think there's better versions of the NSA, like better parallels from the Book of Mormon.
It's terrible. It doesn't even, I don't think it even suggests.
There's the one in, I want to say Mormon, maybe Ether, but it's where they talk about how your secrets will be shouted from the rooftops. You remember
that
scripture?
Sure, that one's pretty good. Or just secret combinations
like,
in general.
I feel like that would be a better one, right? That's more NSA-esque.
Gadiant and robbers, perhaps?
Yeah. Are we talking about the daughter of Jared dancing, huh?
Yeah, that's a little worse. Because think about this. I don't believe it suggests in the Book of Mormon that just because it says he can look over all the land round about, that's not saying that Noah was establishing surveillance of his own people from the tower. The tower was clearly a defensive measure to keep track of the Lamanites on the outside, which has very little to do with... I mean, it's not NSA, was
no,
it?
No, that's what they... Just like the NSA, that's what King Noah said.
Ah,
but he
yes.
was actually spying on his domestic citizens.
But in all reality, he was tapping all of his citizens. He was looking at their scrolls
mm-hmm.
and their things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get this guy. I'm sorry, Robert Lockhart, he might be replacing McKay Coppins.
Well, no. Despite the fact that he may have missed the mark a little bit, still, I love anything that draws parallels to the Book of Mormon and then puts it in Huffington
Post. But this is not even a good parallel. This was not worthy of publication, I don't feel.
Jeff, it's not too late to change.
That's just because that's what he said. And then it says the prophet Mormon was a visionary man, and he's...
Jeff, he closes with, if we learn from the past, we can build a brighter future. All right, so any guy that closes with a hook like that deserves our utmost respect.
The best defense against enemies is living in such a way that you are on God's side. I guess it's like, here's the thing with Huffington Post. Once you get authorized as a contributing blogger, you can do whatever the heck you want. And this is a perfect example of that because...
You should do it, Jeff. You should do it.
I would, because this has obviously nothing to do with business or entertainment. This is just one man's opinion about Noah and surveillance.
Anywho.
And it's got fun
times in the Mormon world. We're getting out there. Things are happening.
And it's got a big right-wing agenda, too. Because he talks about how the income tax strays from the founding fathers' ideals. The New Deal dramatically increased the rate of illegitimate births.
That's what Obamacare is all about.
Because of welfare, which also has nothing to do with things. So I decry you, Robert Lockhart. You have written the worst piece of drivel I have read in at least 4 days.
I didn't mind it. What was the one that talks about? Oh, that's the Orson Scott Card one we've got to talk about next.
Okay.
One about Obama enlisting the National Police Force, which is actually... just hoodlums, gang members from the streets.
Exactly.
I feel like Orson Scott Card and Robert should get together. Robert Lockhart.
Yeah,
what
Orson's...
if they got together? So here's the problem that we face as Mormons sometimes. Just being prepared and knowing what we know. We are one step away from being like conspiracy theorists to the max, always.
Uh-huh.
Because everything can mean the end or like huge drama and desperation. People, we gotta keep this in check a little bit. I mean, we've gotta be warning our neighbor while at the same time being sensible about what we're saying. Now, like, I mean, there will never be a time where the appropriate response is running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
That will never happen. Even in the fire and brimstone moment, your call is still to go and help your neighbor, not to go and say, "It's here! It's happening!"
Yeah, I mean, this is only relevant, this story, for example, because Orson Scott Card, of course, is LDS. He's come under a lot more fire of late because of his views on gay marriage, and that's been a bigger deal because of Ender's Game. You know, the film adaptation is coming out in a few months, blah, blah, blah. But this, of course, has nothing directly to do with the church or any church policy.
Blah, blah, blah.
But it's just a Mormon just being crazy. I mean... He actually says, his own quote is, "Where will we get national police? They'll be recruited from young, out-of-work urban men as a cure for the economic malaise of inner cities."
He's just spitballing here.
But Obama is actually going to wander through Detroit and say, "Come to me and be my personal militia. And then we will tour this great land together." I see this. I kid you not. This seems, you're going to love this, where I'm going with this, Al. This seems to me to be a little bit kind of like the Karos in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, letting Slytherin exclusively be the enforcing squad. Am I right or am I right? Oh,
yeah, for sure.
Or Order of the Phoenix.
Preach it, McGonagall.
Or Order of the Phoenix, for that matter. Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, somebody who gets me.
Thank you. What I like to do is I like to take complex terms and I like to make it so it makes sense to you.
Oh, Jeff, you're so Larcine.
Did you want to say laconic again?
Laconic, that's the word. There we are. Okay, so let's see. We got another article over on Doves and Serpents, which is, how would you describe this blog? It's sort of a...
It's a prominent Mormon blog.
Is it prominent? Is it sort of the feminist blog?
No, that's yes. Feminist Mormon Housewives. I give Doves and Serpents as overall Mormon bloggerisms. I give it a top five ranking of the heavyweights.
Whoa, really?
Top seven.
What
at
are
the
we?
Max.
What are we?
Oh well, we're number one, Al. Thank or are we Jeff. A step higher than one? Are we zero? Are we ground zero in Mormon news and commentary? I submit to you that we, as we stand upon the precipice of eternity, are the greatest production the world has ever known.
That's fair, and that's from an unbiased observer's standpoint.
Thank you.
So they had an article this week where Cam says, this must stop.
Fry sauce.
A call to end sexually invasive interviews between priesthood leaders and minors in the LDS Church. So she tells the story of how when she was 13 years old, she was violated in a very personal way. She leads on with in a very dramatic flair, which is good writing. A middle-aged man from my neighborhood pulled me aside, brought me into a private room, and asked me explicit sexual questions. It was traumatic. It triggered severe anxiety, and I spent the next 15 years worried that something like that might happen to me again. Then a couple paragraphs later, she says, you see, I was at church in my bishop's office when I had this experience.
What?
And so, so essentially, her bishop called her in to interview her. She did not appreciate the questioning and felt like it was too much, that it was too far. I have been a teenager in the church, and I have undergone similar lines of questioning. Things like, do you have a problem with pornography? And things like, do you have a problem with whatever. Like they'll bring up everything.
But should
now they? Here's the in the comments down below, there's a lot of people that have had similar stories. And I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've had similar experiences
they
as
have
well.
A, where, sorry if I can interject. Yes, many of our listeners have commented on Facebook about this, actually.
Oh, yeah. What are they saying there?
I'd say it runs the gamut. Some people who have never seen a problem like this, and some people who unfortunately have had horrible experiences, even with the stake president. Like women, when they ask them really over-the-top, sexually direct and explicit questions about stuff.
Now, some of the things that she calls for, she says that, well, the one that I think is interesting and worth discussion here is that she says confession must be voluntary.
Yes.
Right? So, there's stories of people being called in and questioned directly about different sex acts, you know, like beyond do you live the law of chastity? And I'm curious if that's the job of a bishop, right? So she says confession must be voluntary. That got me thinking where I wonder if a bishop's job is just invite somebody in and say, you want to chat? Anything you want to talk about? And if they say no, is their job to say, okay, then see you later? Is their job to like help them uncover things they're struggling with and help them get over them? As a judge in Israel, where do you think that line is, Jeff?
Well, I'm not a judge in Israel, so I appreciate.
I'm saying like looking at a bishop's role as a judge in Israel, is their role to help elicit confessions, or is their role to be a listening ear so that those who wish to confess can come in?
You know what we do need? We need Kurt Frankum, if you're listening to this, over at Leading LDS, our standing bishop in the Twim family. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I guess, obviously having never been in the position myself, I feel like it is more create a healthy environment where one can feel comfortable doing as one has been taught. And that's the thing. We are taught repeatedly in the church, if you study doctrine, if you pay attention to anything, that we should know pretty clearly when we need to go talk to the bishop. I don't think a bishop should be trying to cajole information out of people.
Let's say you're a bishop in a singles ward or a bishop in a family ward and you have a lot of youth, right? Where they legitimately, I mean, what a lot of the stuff that goes around in youth and singles ward stuff is where you know, sort of the you know, like guys will try and convince somebody that oral sex isn't really sex, or anal sex isn't really sex, or whatever else sex isn't really sex, or, you know, we can do this and we can go this far and that's okay. You don't need to talk to your bishop about that, but not this, right? And so those are like the conversations that are being had in dating, you know, in like the dating environment.
Yes,
right?
But then what if I come back to you right now and I say, Al, I don't know what those things are that you just told me about.
Well, so great. That's what I'm saying, though. If you go and sit down in a bishop's office and the bishop says, do you have a problem with the law of chastity? And you don't know what any of those are, or you don't know that those are wrong, or your parents have not had the cojones to have that conversation with you about what all that stuff is going on. And you answer, I don't have a problem with the law of chastity. And he says, all right, great. Well, you unknowingly, I mean, you don't know any better, but you've clearly crossed the line that he was supposed to be able to identify, right? He was supposed to be able to catch that and say, no, you're not quite there yet. Let's work on getting this better.
Sure, sure.
So that's, I think that's where it gets gray for me, is like it's his job to, I mean, to judge that stuff. And he needs to be, you know, somebody has to ask those hard questions of youth, because most parents won't.
Well, that's true, right? And that might not even be a parent's job. I mean, I think anyone, youth or other, should be able to rest and take solace in the fact that you can have a confidential, important, good discussion with a bishop and not have to involve family members, because that can be uncomfortable.
No. I mean a parent's job in educating their kids in what that stuff
is. Oh, that should be. Don't
needs,
be a slacker,
and what
parents.
Needs to be brought before the bishop.
I mean, if kids don't know what some stuff is, then say, all right, your parents need to be teaching you this stuff. I don't know if it's the bishop's job to
be a
teacher.
You would be really, really surprised, right? Like, having worked with church youth groups, like, I mean, thousands and thousands of youth, and all of a sudden, you know, you have a kid talking to you about something where he just says, I had no idea this was even wrong.
True.
And like, why should this be wrong and that's not wrong? And you're like, well, let's talk about the principle here. Let's talk about what's happening and why this is wrong. I mean, they just have, they're clueless. They have no idea. You know, like I can't think of a single time that my parents had talks on specific things. I mean, so much of it, you learn from like high school and people around you and what they're saying and try and piece it all together. And you feel like you have a pretty good picture. And then do you? I don't know.
I guess it is hard to say, because you could easily say that, you know, a bishop could whip out for the strength of youth and say, well, let's go through this here. And say,
I feel like whip out is a poor choice. Of
thank you.
In this
but
conversation.
Thank you, Al. But they could, you think you could go through that and make sense of it. But at the same time, even for the strength of youth is relatively ambiguous. I mean,
oh, it's super ambiguous.
You know, it just says, you know, be clean, don't do this and that. Don't engage in petting or this or that. And plenty of kids can be like, I don't know what petting, heavy petting, what does this all mean?
Right, which we talked about before. Those word choices, those ambiguous word choices, aren't helping anybody, right?
They're not, but obviously you're not going to put a publication that has sexually explicit language in it.
Sure, sure. Well, even today we opted out of a couple of articles that had similar things just because it was too...
Well,
much,
not just
right?
Not just too much. Do you want to be an enabler? And that's what I've also found, yep, a lot in the comments from this article. Many people who say the bishop will talk about this and this and this. Have you done X, Y, and Z? And the kids have never even thought about that before. And then all of a sudden, they're all confused and curious and who knows what else.
Well, so again, I mean, we come back to, is a bishop's job, like, should those confessions be voluntary? Because as a 50-year-old man, do you pull a 15-year-old girl in and say, what's going on? Let's work on this.
I am convinced that the best bishops are the ones who create, like I said before, an environment when they don't call someone in and say, hey, I've been keeping my eye on you and I think something is up. I don't think that ever works, because then you feel like you are being scolded for poor behavior. The only way repentance even works effectively is if someone comes in there knowing that they've got to sort some stuff out and they're willing to do it. I mean, how would you feel if your bishop called you and said, oh, I've had the inspiration that you've been in trouble. I mean,
oh my gosh. No. That exact conversation has happened with me. And it's a catalyst sometimes, right?
Well, maybe.
Like, I feel like that used well is super,
I think,
powerful.
It can be used well, but perhaps better on adults, because this article focuses specifically on the youth and how
No. Well, and I have no problem going and talking to my bishop now as an adult.
Of course.
As a 14-year-old trying to make an appointment with the bishop without my mom knowing so that she wouldn't be mad at me for doing something wrong because I was supposed to be perfect.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like those kind of, hey, I've noticed you're not as chipper as you normally are. And you know, I just get the feeling that something's bugging you. Do you want to talk about it? Like, that, those kind of conversations are super helpful.
Yeah. And of course, they're... bishops are going to cross the line. I mean, this makes the point to say, teach our kids that it's not okay for a bishop to ask them specific questions about whether they, whether they touch themselves or what they've this and that done. And I guess it's this interesting idea of saying it's not okay for the bishops to ask specifically as opposed to just openly saying, I am here to talk if you want to talk.
Well, now, take it one step further. As soon as you say, hey, bishop, I have a problem with X, right? The bishop's job is to identify the severity of it. And so he starts asking, well, by X, do you mean this or do you mean this?
And a lot of people might...
did it go this far or this far? Because it makes a difference.
Yeah. And a lot of people might even say that, you know, it goes too far because the bishop will ask very specific questions. And I've heard terrible things about, you know, how far it went. What sensations did you experience? Where did this happen? And you could say in many cases it is too deep, perhaps. But what if it is a matter of circumstance? Like, you'd be like, well, it happened at my girlfriend's house because her parents weren't home. And you could be like, well, good. Now we know that's a trouble spot. So what we need to do is make sure you're not hanging out at your girlfriend's house when the parents aren't home. You know, I mean, that's...
Well, nah. I mean, like, I look at this, and I'm torn because I understand the inappropriateness of having those conversations as an old guy and a teenage girl, right? I understand how that could be very inappropriate. I also understand that, you know, maybe you just need to, like, I don't know, that's how I've always known the process to work, and it's worked for me. And it's fine, and it's worked for people that I know and siblings, sisters, females that I know, right? Like, they've all gone through the repentance process and are better because of it. Was it too far? I mean, those questions taken out of context would definitely be too far, right?
Yeah, and then it's a whole other can of worms. I mean, if we talk about dealing with this with young women, I don't even know how I feel about that. Being a guy, it wasn't as big of a deal, but I do feel like it's creepy in some ways to think about a bishop who's typically, you know, middle-aged-ish and some teenage girl one-on-one. I mean, that's got to be really uncomfortable.
That's the only way we're built to handle it, though. I mean, you can't go and confess your sins to your Relief Society president.
Well, I understand that, and there are some that say that we should have other people present, you know, in these situations.
I don't know. Well, so we've spent a long time on this article, but this, it really interests me because I don't know the answer. I think it's a very curious question, probably something that we'll need to be dealing with as a church in the next couple of years. I suspect that they'll start coming out and saying, here's how we're going to handle these situations. And I would not be surprised if there's a female ecclesiastical leader that sort of helped field some of that stuff and then could almost be a liaison between the 15-year-old girl and the bishop and like then bring that conversation to them. Much as like if you had that conversation with a counselor in the bishopric, right? A confession conversation. He then would bring you into the bishop and say, hey, so this is what's going on. I thought maybe we could help him by...
Well, I think in some ways you can, but not in maybe in an official capacity. But just as you might have had conversations as an Elders Quorum president when you've been one, or with an Elders Quorum president, who is not certified in that sense with keys to necessarily preach repentance and go through that process. But that's a great person to talk to. I don't think it's wrong for sisters to feel comfortable talking to a young women's president if they're younger, or a Relief Society president to flesh some stuff out.
I wonder if that will become more promoted as sort of the channel of things to
do. And then
do
perhaps if it needs a referral, then work it off. But how much more sense would that make? It's not that a young women's president would be saying, oh yeah, I'm judging you, here's the steps to repentance, we're going to figure this out and get through it. But to be an open ear as a sounding board to kind of work through some issues before taking the next step. That could do a lot of good.
The downside is, of course, I mean, you feel like when you've done something wrong, the last thing you want to do is for a lot of people
to know,
right?
It's true. So, also, women are crazy and can't be trusted with secrets.
Is that true?
That's absolutely 100% false.
You chauvinist pig,
false.
Jeff.
What I just said
false.
Is it was
okay,
false.
Good.
Well, we got a couple quick things before we go today. Minor story here, just kind of an interesting history, really, on the website bluereview.org. It's a publication of Boise State University. It's a story about how basically political parties maligned Mormons in Idaho in order to attain statehood. Yes, sir.
Wait, what happened?
Basically, Idaho, Mormons back in the day in the late 19th century were actually mostly Democrats. Sorry, I was going to say Democratic, but were mostly Democrats in the late 19th
Democrats.
Century. Democrats. Republicans at the time used this to their advantage because the federal government was pretty anti-Mormon at the time. And eventually, Democrats within their own party turned on the Mormons because they had to in order to create balance and get votes to attain statehood. Basically, everyone was okay with disenfranchising Mormons, and there was even an act that was passed called, I think, was this the Alien Land Act? Or there's another one here. There was also the Test Oath of 1884, which prohibited Mormons in Idaho from voting, holding political office, and serving on juries. So, anyways, it's kind of an interesting read about how they basically try to block Mormons out and so that they could attain statehood in Idaho. There's nothing else to it, but it's just a good little read for some history.
Oh, that is neat.
Thank you.
Let's see, the one other one. There is a openly gay Mormon who taught a religious class at BYU this summer.
Yeah.
Which is
I'm confused
cool.
by this, though. It says that he was an openly gay instructor, but that he's married to a woman and they have parent kids.
Hey, Josh Weed.
That's
man.
What I'm saying.
Is
this a Josh Weed situation where he's still gay, or did he get over it? Did they therapize the gay out of him?
I like that the BYU honor code reflects that same gender attraction is not an honor code issue. It's simply the honor code only deals with sexual behavior,
yeah,
not persuasion.
Not
well. So anyway, like I think that's great that. You know, the one that he felt like it was a welcome enough environment for him to go and teach at. Two, that the university was, in fact, open enough for him to go teach at.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, really matter. One thing I want to remind everybody of, and we're sorry it didn't happen this week, Al's beautiful pet project, which we're calling Gospel Study Sesh.
Hey, we're working hard on it. You're going to love it.
It's going to happen this Sunday. So, because we could drop it probably middle of this week, but we want them to be week-long little modules for each one. So the first one will be this Sunday. So please sign up. Go to our website, thisweekinmormons.com. You'll see email sign up over there on the left. You can check a box to be a part of our gospel study group. And we hope you'll sign up with that, and we will be pushing it out come Monday. It'll be good. So just wanted to plug that for
also,
you.
Also, send us an email. We've got a couple emails from you this week. Thanks, everybody, for chatting with us. We are at contact at This Week in Mormons. Also, leave a comment on the website like Julie De Azevedo did.
Oh, yeah. Julie De Azevedo found our show last week because we called it.
That's kind of funny. She's like, yeah, that video was a joke, you know.
Is because of my brilliance with SEO. Because I named the episode Julie De Azevedo is Pure Evil. It probably popped up in her Google alerts.
And she's like, ew, I should nip this in the bud.
Yeah, but anyway, Julie De Azevedo now follows us, everyone. So if you love her music or if you have received therapy from her, she's a supporter.
Anyway, also you can find us on Twitter at TheRealTwim, or on Facebook, facebook.com/ThisWeekinMormons.
Yep.
We have many fans. Come join us. We love
it. We love it when you talk to us on there. And we'd also love it if you paid attention to Sunday School Bonanza, my little beautiful thing where we talk about gospel doctrine lessons in an effort to get you better prepared to go to gospel doctrine, you know, sainthood improved.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Hey, have a great week.
Okay. Al, you have a great week too. We appreciate you listening in. We hope you'll do it. And we hope you'll spread the word. And we thank those of you who continually push This Week in Mormons upon your friends and loved ones to the point of anger, perhaps. But that's okay.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Ad nauseum, but we like it. Anyways, Al, have a great week.
All right, buddy. Hey, see
ya. Hey, bye. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.